The temperature's rising outside, but you can stay cool and comfortable inside with Blinds.com. Don't miss Blinds.com's 4th of July mega sale happening now. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments with upfront pricing, no showroom markups, and no pushy salespeople in your home. Whether you're a DIY warrior, prefer the white glove treatment, or somewhere in between, Blinds.com makes it easy. Our virtual design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. Plus, we can even handle everything from measure to install. Style every room effortlessly with classic shutters for living spaces, blackout for bedrooms, motorized options for total convenience, shades for your patio too. With over 25 million windows covered and 40,000 five-star reviews, Blinds.com is the trusted name in custom window treatments, all backed by our 100% satisfaction guarantee. Don't miss Blinds.com's 4th of July mega sale happening now. Save up to 50%, plus get a free professional measure. Up to 50% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Okay, folks, I think it's time to stop being reasonable when it comes to the Kansas City Royals. I concede. Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan. No Cody, no Gold, no Drew today as they're doing their preseason football session to figure out how they want to approach this year's Chiefs 2025 season. So Logan Weber in here with you guys this morning, along with producer Nathan Williams. We're with you till 2 o'clock here this afternoon. Nathan, good morning.
Good morning, Logan. And what does football planning show mean? That means having beers at Kelly's,
right?
I'm pretty sure
they're drunk at 10 a.m. just, you know, having a ball, having a good time, discussing, well, how do we handle the Chiefs, you know, winning their 700th consecutive AFC West division title? You know, I don't exactly know what goes into. Yeah, sure. I mean, just the amount of brain power, the bandwidth that it takes them mentally to get through a day like today, I'm sure is just so difficult to get through. But we're going to have fun here over the next 4 hours, at least I hope so. Talking Chiefs, talking Royals. We got some national news. Of course, the big news of yesterday with the request for an extension on the Star Bond issue in Kansas. We'll discuss that. Coming up at 10:30 this morning, we're going to have Jake Eisenberg on with us, play-by-play radio commentator for the Kansas City Royals. So he'll be joining us at 10:30. We may replay that interview a little bit later on in the show if you guys can't join us for that in the next half hour. But let's start with yesterday and the last week, I guess you could say. For weeks now, I have tried my best to defend this Royals baseball team. I have tried so hard to say, hey, everybody stop. You know, it's not time to hit the panic button. Everything's going to be fine. This team's not struggling that bad. You know, they'll figure it out. I'm done. I'm pretty well done trying to defend what's happening right now. After you lose 2 out of 3 against the Padres, you get swept last night against the Rays. Shane Boz went 8 innings yesterday, Nathan. 8 scoreless innings. Coming into the game, he had an ERA at nearly 5. And then throws 8 scoreless with only 3 hits allowed against the Royals yesterday. Just briefly, I want to run down his stats in his previous starts. Here's his game log on ESPN. 5 1/3 against the Tigers, he gave up 5 earned. Hey, on June 15th, he pitched 6 2/3 scoreless against the Mets. So that's not all that bad. He then gave up 3 runs against the Red Sox, 3 against the Rangers, 3 against the Astros. He gave up 1 against Toronto, 5 against Miami, 3 against Toronto, 6 against the Phillies. In his last start against the Royals, back on May 1st, he went 5 2/3. He gave up 7 earned runs. Yet he goes 8 scoreless innings. Best start of his career. First start of his career that went 8 innings or more with 8 or more strikeouts and no earned runs. He had the best start of his career against this Royals team with an ERA that approached nearly 5 coming into yesterday. He had a stretch there where he had like what? 19 straight. He got 19 straight batters out. It's one of those situations where it wouldn't be bad if the expectations weren't there, right? Like, I don't remember people getting, at least I don't personally myself remember getting upset about this Royals baseball team 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when they were losing 100 games every year because the expectations didn't exist. But this is a team that won 86 games a year ago and made progressive changes as the year went along that kind of led you to believe this team could be pretty good this year. You've watched Mikel Garcia really leapfrog himself into being an all-star. Vinny Pasquantino, after a really, really bad month of March and April, hit the cover off the ball in May and is rolling with a batting average up over .260. Coming into the month, Drew Waters and Kyle Isbell were hitting the ball really, really well. And this team was a team that you looked at and said, oh, well, you know, they hit, you know, they get on base. They just struggle to hit with runners in scoring position. They struggle to drive in runs. That's what we've heard over and over and over again. Well, now that's not even the topic of conversation. This team just can't hit. I mean, they can't hit at all. They scored 1 run on what? 11 hits? 12 hits over the course of this series against the Rays. And I know the Rays are a good baseball team, but I don't know, man. I'm pretty well panicked at this point about this Royals baseball team. And I am far less convinced now than I was 2 weeks ago about whether this team will be buyers or sellers at the deadline.
I think the low hanging fruit about Shane Boz's last outing against the Royals would be, well, it took place in a AAA ballpark. So maybe there was just some more comfort there from the Royals lineup. I kid. All due respect to Shane Boz and Taj Bradley, who pitched on Tuesday night for the Rays. Those outings, those games cannot happen against pitchers of this quality. And this is regardless of expectation. It's regardless of saying, well, Drew Waters used to hit well. Kyle Isbell is hitting well. They're the lowest scoring team in the league, the team with the least power in the league, and the team with one of the lower averages with runners in scoring position in the league. I don't care what your expectation is, they're underperforming that. So to say this is just disappointing based on the playoff expectations that were set last year, I think you're underselling just how bad this lineup has been.
Yeah, because you look at it, I remember at the end of May, when you looked at this Royals baseball team, they were top 10 in Major League Baseball in batting average. They were hitting up over .250 as a team, which if that were to would have held, would have been the first time in a decade that the Kansas City Royals had a team batting average up over .250. And that has cratered here in the month of June. They've hit .233. They've got 22 home runs, which is actually the most home runs they've hit in a month. But somehow they've only scored 68 runs. They have an on-base percentage this month of .286. They have an OPS at .660 as a team. They are 7-15 this month and are winless at home in the month of June. I got sick to my stomach the other day when I saw somebody on social media put up a graphic that said the Savannah Bananas have more wins at Kauffman Stadium in the month of June than the Royals do. Excuse me? I just cannot believe where we're at right now. And I have been, somebody in the text line said, I'm tired of all the Q apologists. I have been a Matt Quatrero apologist. I probably still am a Matt Quatrero apologist. But I defended Alex Umwalt quite a bit over the last few weeks of like, this team is hitting. This is a team that's hitting nearly .250 and blah, 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 blah. They're just not hitting with runners in scoring position. But after this collapse here in the month of June, paired with, and again, I'm not going to go into too much detail on it because I don't know a lot about the situation, but, you know, I saw on social media yesterday, you know, reports or screenshots of him allegedly like going after fans in DMs on social media. You can't do that. Again, I'm not confirming that that's what happened. That's just what I'm seeing on social media and the screenshots and all these things. You can't do that when you're in a position like Alex Zumwalt is in. That is a bad, terrible look for a guy of that respect. So I'm sort of changing my opinion that I think changes can and should be made with this Royals baseball team. And I think that it probably starts with the replacement of the Royals hitting coach.
I think so too. One of those Savannah Banana games, I think they pulled a service member out to have like an at bat in the bottom of the last inning, and he got a base hit, won the game. It's the biggest hit that stadium's seen in a month. It's abysmal. The interesting thing about our power numbers as well is like they've come in. The Royals hit 7 home runs in one game in Baltimore earlier this year. They hit, I think, 8 in the series against Texas last week. They've come in like such condensed periods that it's like so clearly, you know, a fluke, the exception to the rule. And so when you talk about the batting average down month over month, I think it was reasonable to sit here before and say, as long as they start hitting with runners in scoring position, it'll fix itself. But that never came. And so now you're seeing the average dip, the ERA of the pitching rotation spike, and all of these unsustainable things cracked, and the floor is sort of falling out from underneath this team. As far as the hitting coach goes, it would be a very bad look if what you talked about was true. And you do have to wonder, I mean, certainly all options when it comes to personnel in the system have been exhausted. The only other things to accomplish are coaching decisions, mm-hmm. trades, things, you know, that involve people entering and leaving the organization. So I can't sit here and say, I can't sit here and defend the hitting coach at this point in time.
I tried really hard to be kind of that defensive mechanism because, again, this team won 86 games last year. It was hard for me to wrap my brain around making wholesale changes with a team that made the postseason last year for the first time in a decade. And, you know, I maybe it was just wishful thinking, glass half full optimism on my part that I thought that things would change, things would turn around, and maybe they still will. But I am far less convinced of that at this point. If looking at the splits hurts my soul a little bit. In 40 road games this year, the Royals have hit 43 home runs. And I know that Kauffman Stadium is one of the toughest ballparks to hit in the entire league, right? It is one of the hardest balls to hit a home run out of because of how wide and how deep the field is. The Royals have 13 home runs at Kauffman Stadium this year. 13 in 41 games. If you look on a player-by-player basis, there is a hitter for the Colorado Rockies who in 3 games hit more home runs at Kauffman than any Royals player has the entire season. That can't happen. And I don't know where things have diverged. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. has hit 30-30 seasons in back-to-back years. Salvador Perez set an American League record for home runs in a season by a primary catcher while playing the majority of those games inside Kauffman Stadium. But Bobby's power numbers are down. Salvi's power numbers are down this year. Vinny, despite the fact that he's hitting the ball pretty well, is not hitting with runners in scoring position, and his power numbers aren't wowing you by any stretch of the imagination. Isbell and Waters, yeah, both of those guys have batting averages that are hovering around 250, which for those guys is great, right? Isbell is never going to be a guy that approaches a 280 to 300 batting average. He's not. Kyle Isbell reminds me a little bit of Alex Gordon. I'm not saying he's as talented as Alex Gordon. I'm never going to go that far as to say Kyle Isbell is an all-star caliber player the way that Gordo was at points in his Royals career. But Gordo was out there because of what he did with the glove in left field. Kyle is out there because of what he does with the glove in center field. But those guys have no pop whatsoever. And in the brief amount of time that we've now seen Jack Caglione in Major League Baseball, his power isn't there. He's got two home runs in 17, 18, 19 games at this point. If I'm being honest, we as fans are frustrated. And I know that they would never say it publicly, right? They'd never go out on in front of the media or on Twitter or anything like that. But if I'm the Royals pitching staff, I am furious right now. Because it's second verse, same as the first, right? The hitting was okay at points last year, and the pitching carried you. The pitching is arguably better this year than it was last year. But the hitting has fallen off at such an extent that this is a losing baseball team. And a team that a month ago we were talking about what power bats the Royals could acquire. Even a week ago, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, I've thrown out name Kyle Stowers, and Eugenio Suarez was being thrown around a lot with the Royals, which made no sense because he's on a winning baseball team with the Diamondbacks, and former Royal and Ryan O'Hearn coming to Kansas City and all these things. I'm not sure that's going to happen at this point. At this point, I think it's very, very likely that a name like a Seth Lugo in the bullpen, you mentioned Michael Lorenzen. This team, when you look at the next 17 games on their schedule before the All-Star break, if things don't change and change quickly and change dramatically, this team could probably be 10 to 12 games below 500 when we hit that All-Star break here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, and I don't think this team is going to careen, right, and drop 10, 20 games under 500. I don't think even if they move a few pieces, the team's going to, you know, I think they still are going to win 70, 75 games, even if they sell pieces. I don't think this is going to turn into a lost season. I think Lorenzen would have been on the move regardless if this team was playing better than it is now, because of the rest of the rotation getting healthy. But yeah, you have to look at a guy like Seth Lugo and wonder if and when that's going to happen. I mean, he has the player option at the end of this season, based on the way he's performed the last two seasons, which is much better than the rest of his career looks, or at least is much more valuable because he's now starting. He was probably going to go get, you know, his last multi-year contract and do it elsewhere. But like you said, they have to be so frustrated with the lack of production and support from this offense that dates back to Vinny's injury in Houston last year. I mean, this is not just a 2025 issue. This was the issue in the playoffs last year, down the stretch last year. Yet you have to imagine that a guy like Seth Lugo would run, not walk, to free agency at the end of this season. So unless things change dramatically, like you said, I am very pro moving Seth Lugo as early as possible.
100%. $15 million option for him next year. But after finishing second in the Cy Young voting last year and with an ERA south of 3 this year, which is, again, elite, he's got 5 consecutive seasons under his belt now with an ERA of 3.5 or lower. This is the last contract he's ever going to sign, right? Take advantage of the tremendous market value that you have created for yourself. Yeah, I think whether the Royals move on from him or not, this is probably Seth Lugo's last year in a Royals uniform, because the Royals aren't going to pay what his market value is going to be when he hits free agency this year. And I think that he very much will hit free agency, because why wouldn't you? It would be somewhat, yeah, the loyalty aspect I get, and I would applaud that from Seth Lugo if he stayed in Kansas City, took the $15 million player option and pushed it back a year. But I think it would be foolish for him to not go into free agency with the value that he has and capitalize on that. I don't know.
Yeah, he could probably, he could certainly go and get a second guaranteed year from somebody, mm-hmm, this offseason, and probably do that at a higher annual average value than he's currently making. So I don't know if that's 2 years, $40 million guaranteed with a third-year player option. He deserves it, and I don't think even if this team is successful, I would support the Royals giving him that contract. I'd say, no, you elevate a guy like Bubich, you bring up a guy like Cameron, and you backfill that thing, right? You develop starting pitching. It's the way small-market teams win. So this team's so clearly not going anywhere, which we could be very close to that realization. And I know the text line's going to light up and say, we're already there, you know, fire Q, trade the house. I get it. They're 5 games under 500, probably not going anywhere. But 3 against the Dodgers and then 4 in Seattle against a team that can pitch like no other, we're very close to being, like you said, 10 games under 500 and it's like urgently a seller, not just this back and forth about what they should do. I am pro move Seth Lugo.
I would agree. And again, that's a situation 2-3 weeks ago. I wasn't. I would have been a little bit, I would have pushed back a little bit more to the idea of trading away Seth Lugo, but I don't like necessarily where this team sits right now. And when you mention three against the Dodgers starting today, four on the road against Seattle, then three on the road against Arizona, you get a three-game reprieve possibly against the Pittsburgh Pirates, but it sounds like it's more than likely you're going to see Paul Skenes in one of those three games and likely the series opening game there on July 7th. And then three games at home against a good Mets team before you reach the All-Star break. That is a gauntlet of a 17 game schedule. And then you get out of the All-Star game and it's all right, let's focus on the American League. Let's welcome in the Detroit Tigers for quite a bit of baseball this year. Let's welcome in the Twins for quite a bit of baseball this year, the Guardians as well. And when you look at this division, you look at those three teams, you look at the Royals. I don't know if the Royals are on their level. Certainly not on the Tigers level, because so far they've been the best team in baseball this year. I don't know, man. I do not think this Royals team is in a good place, and I have tried for so long to defend it, and I think I'm just pretty much over it at this point.
Boy, I hadn't thought about it before until you brought up the schedule. If this team could have just treaded water, right? Like won the series in Chicago, somehow won that game on Sunday in San Diego that they probably should have won, you know, taking a game or two from the Rays and just been slightly above 500. That August, late July, August schedule is made up of so many division games. They'd be in a like sneakily prime position mm-hmm. to make a run if they just went and got a bat or two. It's how disappointing is that to realize that? And the text line points out about Seth Lugo that they believe that it'll be an overpay. And I think that's why Logan and I are, you know, anti the Royals giving him that contract and imagine this is his last year on the team, you know, even if things get better. Anyway, just to wrap up that point.
Yeah, I mean, it will be. Yes, somebody in the text line says, whoever signs Lugo will severely overpay and have a bad contract. He's 35 years old. That's Major League Baseball free agency for you, right? I mean, that is what the market does, is it leads to chronic overpaying of players. I mean, the deal that Albert Pujols got with the Angels years and years ago, the deal that A-Rod got with the Yankees. I mean, you know, you see it every year where guys are in the midst of their prime and they get these exorbitant contracts that end up blowing up in their face, or I should say in the face of their organization. It happens every year, but for Seth Lugo, why not? Why not go out there into free agency? And if the market is $15 million, then you're like, okay, you know, I turned down this player option and it didn't work out for me. But for a guy who was the runner-up for the Cy Young last year and is very, you know, pitching very, very well again this year, and if he can hold it over the course of the next 81 games, he could be a finalist for the AL Cy Young again. It's just that's the kind of value that he could give a team, at least on paper, and somebody, right? The Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers, the Padres, the Cardinals, somebody with a much larger payroll in a much larger area, I guess you could say, is going to throw that money at him.
Yeah, and the Padres got into a little bidding war with the Royals, from what I understand, before Seth Lugo came here, when Lugo was on his way out of San Diego. I wouldn't be surprised to see a reunion there at all. But the whole point is, like, I agree that the back end of his next contract is probably an overpay. I think he's getting at least 2 years guaranteed, probably in the $15 to $20 million range, and probably a third year. It's either a mutual option, player option. And I don't want the Royals signing that contract, no matter what happens the rest of the season. So if you're going to lose, there's no point in keeping the guy around.
No question. 913-586-7965 is our number. Just taking a look down the text line here. If you run out the same offense and no one gets better, but things are significantly worse, that's coaching. Yes and no, right? I mean, baseball is the most difficult sport in the world, right? I mean, it has so much give and take to it. What I'm trying to think of the quote that Vinny gave last night. It's baseball is a game of chance, or I don't remember exactly what Vinny said, but the way that we view baseball and the way that baseball is actually played by the players is dramatically different. So while I do agree that there is some coaching issues with this Royals baseball team and that those need to be addressed, I still believe that some of this responsibility, and certainly a good amount of this responsibility, falls on the players themselves. I don't know where this team goes from here. With 17 games until the deadline, it's they're in an area right now where it is put up or shut up. I think this is a make or break stretch for this Royals baseball team. If you can go 9-8, 8-9 over the course of this next 17 games, and you're still sitting, you know, at worst 5 or 6 games below 500, if you can basically just tread water here for a little while, like you were saying earlier, then okay, this team could go any number of directions. I'm not overly confident that we're going to see 9-8, 8-9 or better over this 17 game stretch. If this team goes 6-11 or 5-12 and they're 10 games below 500 when we hit the All-Star break, alarm bells are going to start going off and probably should start going off. You're listening to Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber in here for Cody and Alex today. Nathan Williams behind the glass producing the program for Drew here this morning. We're with you till 2 o'clock. Coming up, we're going to have Jake Eisenberg. He is the play-by-play voice of the Kansas City Royals. He'll be joining us next right here on your home for Kansas City sports. Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan. No Cody, no Gold. Logan Weber in here with you. Nathan Williams is alongside producing the program here this morning. We're with you from 10 o'clock till 2. And on the line with us right now is Jake Eisenberg. He is the play-by-play radio announcer for the Kansas City Royals. Jake, good morning.
It's good to be with you. And I think we've got to change the name these Fridays. If Cody and Gold keep ducking out, we've got to change the name, I think.
I know. I guess today they're doing their football preparation session, or I don't even know what exactly they're calling it. Nathan and I are both just convinced that they're at a bar somewhere drunk at 10 a.m. just talking about football today. So I don't know. I think they're just having a good time under the guise of saying they're working.
Well, forget them. You and I are here. Let's chop it up.
All right, let's do that. And, you know, a bit of a tough stretch for the Royals here. They've lost 5 in a row, including this sweep against the Tampa Bay Rays over the past 3 days. You know, where are we at with this Royals team right now? Of course, the fan base very vocal right now with this team sitting at 38-43 last night. There was a lot of conversation in the locker room. Vinny with some pointed phrases. You heard from Matt Quatrero yesterday about where this team is and that they're not willing to just lay down. They're going to keep fighting. Where does the fight need to go for this Royals team in order to get back into playing competitive baseball?
Yeah, it's been kind of a weird year, right? Because they started a little bit slow, but then they got super hot and won 16 of 18, but then they slid back a little bit and, you know, had some trouble winning series, but weren't exactly losing series or getting swept. And then they had to win this homestand, and then they won 4 straight. Now they've lost 5 in a row. It's been a lot of peaks and unfortunately slightly more valleys than peaks. But while last year was kind of a steady climb over the course of the year, this year has been a lot more up and down and up and down. And I think you can, you know, obviously point to the offense with that, which has been up and down and up and down and mostly down, and certainly is down right now. And, you know, I think you can look at this in a number of ways, Logan. One of the things that I was kind of just taking a look at yesterday was, you know, it was game 81 of the season. You know, it's the mathematical midpoint of the year. And so that's a point of the year where, at least what I've come to understand over the last couple of years, you can kind of look around and say, okay, this is what this team has done for half the season. This is the team that you have. There are improvements that can be made with any team, but this is kind of what you got. And you're looking at a Royals team that has exceptional starting pitching and a really good bullpen and an offense that has been among the worst in baseball. All of those things can change because there's still another half of the season to play. And I don't think we've looked at any baseball season any time ever and said that a team that was one thing in the first half of the season was also the exact same thing in the second half of the season. Things can be similar, sure. In the Royals' case, for the offense, you hope that they're different and that they continue to improve. You also hope the pitching is similar. So I think you can look at this and say, the Royals are five games below 500 and, you know, knocking on the door of a wild card spot with the expanded, you know, wild card spots in baseball now over the last few years, you know, three wild card spots. The Royals are 3.5 games out of a wild card spot, 81 games through the year. I think you'd say, yeah, you know what? They've got a real good shot to be in the postseason. They've got some work to do, but you look at a whole half of the season left and you say, okay, there is plenty of time for the offense to pick up where it left off last year and try to turn it around.
You looked at this Royals team through the first few months of the year, and it was a team that at one point was, I don't know if it was the early part of May or even the midpoint of May, they were top 10 in Major League Baseball in terms of team batting average, hitting up over 250. And you thought, okay, it's a team that they hit for average, they get on base, but for some reason, when they get runners on second and third, they have a tendency to struggle. They can't really drive in many runs. And then, you know, you see this five-game stretch here, this five-game losing streak, where they're even struggling to just get guys on the base paths here. And I'm curious, from your perspective, what are you seeing on a day-to-day basis with this team and why they're having such trouble just putting the bat on the baseball and getting guys on base to try to score runs?
I mean, it's a cop-out, but I don't know. I mean, Q said it a couple times, too. If there was a magic button or one answer, then they would have pressed that button and they would have figured out that answer. And I think, you know, ultimately, offense in baseball is an incredibly nuanced and reactive and fluctuant thing. I think, interestingly, it's harder to sustain good offense, and it's less probable for bad offense to sustain over the course of the season than it is for pitching, because offense is such a reactionary thing. Hitting is such a reactionary thing, while pitching, you control the pace of the game. You control where the ball goes, and, you know, you can change pitching, I think, a little bit easier than you can change offense, generally speaking, from like a 30,000-foot view. One of the things that I think has been interesting is looking at, you know, the overall team average, and then looking at the average with runners in scoring position, and looking at some other numbers through 81 games this year and 81 games last year, and what other teams have done. And, you know, the Rays were just in town, and Q made this point, and he and Ryan were talking about that during the manager show. I thought it was really interesting. Last year, the Rays were one of the worst teams in baseball hitting with runners in scoring position. This year, they've been one of the best. There's no rhyme or reason why. That's just been the case this year. And unfortunately, it's been the opposite for the Royals, where last year they were one of the best, and this season they've been one of the worst. But I'll give you just a couple of numbers that I've been looking at getting ready for tonight's game. The Royals' team average through 81 games last year was 242. The Royals' team average through 81 games this year is 243. It's pretty much identical in terms of just straight batting average from last year to this year. Now, hitting with runners in scoring position, last year at the midpoint, 287. This year at the midpoint, 220. That's clearly where the biggest difference is. One of the other differences has been, you know, in getting on base and slugging a little bit. So on base plus slugging, OPS, through 81 games last year, 702. That was about league average at this point last year. This year through 81 games, it's 661. That's bottom three in baseball. So there's a significant gap in the slug from last year. There's a significant gap in hitting with runners in scoring position from last year. But the overall batting average is pretty much the same. And I just think that's one of those things that raises an eyebrow and you start to understand, wow, runners in scoring position probably has a little bit more variance. A, has a little bit more variance than we realize. And B, maybe we didn't appreciate enough just how good the Royals were with runners in scoring position last year. That last year, as good as they were, was also not the norm. You know, we've gone from one extreme to the other as opposed to one sustainable average thing to another, if that makes sense.
Talking about this team, and you look at the numbers right here at the halfway point of the year, and there's a set here that kind of is staggering to look at when you see that the Royals have played 40 games on the road this year and they've hit 43 home runs versus 13 home runs in 41 games at Kauffman. I know Kauffman's one of the toughest hitter ballparks in all of baseball, but why do you think that this team, or what have you seen that has allowed this team to struggle so much hitting the long ball at home this year compared to what they've done on the road?
Yeah, again, I don't know. I wish I had an answer because, look, other teams play at Kauffman Stadium too, and I think opponents have hit, I want to say, 39 home runs. Visitors have hit 39 home runs at Kauffman Stadium, so those are the same conditions that the Royals have been playing in. If I had to pinpoint, if I had to take a stab at it, you know, and I'm really grasping at straws here, I'm guessing that maybe at home there's a little bit more of a line drive, gap to gap, put the ball in play approach, understanding that Kauffman Stadium plays big and it's harder to hit home runs. And if you have that same, you know, home run style approach, if you will, that you do at a visiting ballpark at Kauffman Stadium, it's more likely than not that that's going to be, you know, a warning track fly out or, you know, deep center sort of thing. So maybe there's something to it there where the Royals, more than other teams, are making a somewhat larger adjustment to their approach when hitting at home versus on the road because they're more acutely aware of the ballpark than other teams that are coming in who are kind of just coming in. We're here for 3 days. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. You know, we're not going to change everything because we're playing a different boat. Does that make sense? That's grasping at straws. And I don't know that that's something that is clearly visible or noticeable. But then when you look at the numbers and you see the home run differences, that's one thing that maybe could be different.
And I think that this Royals team has taken a different approach this year in terms of trying to find solutions than maybe we saw from them last year. A lot of what we saw last year with the trades for relief pitching and things like that, this year it's been a lot of within the organization itself. You've seen Noah Cameron make his way up to the big leagues. You've seen the Royals DFA certain relief pitchers and guys like Hunter Renfroe. Melendez got sent down and a lot of call-ups for some of their big-name prospects, some of which have been huge hits like Noah Cameron, others that have been a little bit more of a miss. Could we see more guys with this Royals organization get the call up from AAA to try to make some noise with this team? Or is it more likely that we see moves at the deadline to try to make some wholesale changes and put this team back in a position to contend?
Good question. I mean, I would say one of the things that's going to dictate what happens close to or near the deadline is the fact that there are so many teams, especially in the American League, that are within striking distance of a playoff spot. And teams are having a hard time deciding whether or not they're going to be buyers or sellers or trying to do a little of both and something in between. And so that makes the pool of players that are available even the more shallow. I also think that, again, in general, I think it's more difficult to acquire an impact hitter than it is to acquire an impact pitcher, starter, or reliever. I mean, impact relievers are the most widely available thing during most trade deadlines. Impact starters, slightly less so. Impact bats, I think a little bit less than that. I think part of the reason is that just because a player has hit really well in one spot for the first half of the season doesn't necessarily mean that he comes to your team, whether it's the Royals or some other team, and all of a sudden does the exact same thing because hitting is such a volatile thing within baseball. As far as internal, you know, changes or improvements, you know, just thinking about the guys that have been in AAA that are now with the Royals, Drew Waters, John Rabe, Nick Lofton, those are all players that started the season in AAA. The one that we could see come back up at some point is MJ Melendez. Outside of that, I'm not sure what kind of offensive pieces there would be in AAA. Cam Devaney is one that comes to mind, but positioning defensively would be kind of difficult. Obviously, Michael Massey's on the injured list. He's someone that's going to be back in the mix. And you hope that this stint on the injured list not only gets him obviously fully healthy, but also served as a little bit of a reset for him because he struggled offensively this season too. And he was such a big part of the Royals offense last year, kind of lengthening the lineup and bridging that gap between the top half of the lineup and the bottom half of the lineup. I think it's more likely than not that if there is a significant change, it's going to be acquiring a player that is not currently with the Royals, but when, who, and how that happens is obviously remains to be seen.
Well, this Kansas City Royals team is now getting set for a 3-game series against the defending champion Los Angeles Dodgers. For, you know, argument's sake, the Royals are going to be trotting out probably their three best, most consistent pitchers so far this year. Noah Cameron tonight, Lugo, the probable starter tomorrow, and Bubich, the probable on Sunday. Where do you see this Royals team being able to be successful here over this 3-day series against the Dodgers or 3-game series against the Dodgers this weekend as they try to find something here in this homestand to hang their hat on, trying to avoid another winless homestand?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Dodgers are kind of a fascinating team. They have the best offense in baseball. I mean, they literally lead baseball in average on base, slugging, home runs, average runners in scoring position, runs per game. That makes sense because they have Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith, Teoscar Hernandez, Max Muncy, on and on and on. Like, the offense is really, really good. That's what makes the Dodgers go. The pitching has been fascinating because they have two healthy starting pitchers in Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Dustin May, both of whom spent time in the injured list last year. But they basically have an entire starting rotation's worth of pitchers on their injured list. We're talking about Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, Roky Sasaki, Tony Gonsolin. So you look at the Dodgers roster right now, and they in fact have 10 relievers on their active roster and really only four pitchers that are traditional starters: Yamamoto, May, Clayton Kershaw, who pitched yesterday, and then there's that Shohei Ohtani guy who's slated to start on Saturday, but he's still not necessarily starting in a traditional sense. He's still, you know, going one, two, three innings, you know, kind of slowly but surely building back up. So that's a quasi-bullpen game in and of itself. You know, Denny always says the more times you open that bullpen door, the chances increase that the guy who comes in just doesn't have it that day. So I think where the Royals are going to have an edge, for better or for worse, and you can look at this glass half full or glass half empty, is that they're going to face a lot of pitchers coming out of the Dodgers bullpen. Guys that, yes, are nasty, but, you know, you flip a coin, they might not have it that day, and it's going to be up to the Royals to pounce on the weak spot of the Dodgers, which is their pitching staff and their bullpen. Their starters' ERA has been 4.20 this year. That's bottom half of the league. Their starters do not go deep into games. So it'll be interesting to see how that progresses over the course of this weekend. As far as the offense goes, you know, the Royals are going to have to do their best to limit what is a behemoth offense. And like you pointed out, with Cameron Lugo and Bubic, those have been your three most consistent starters. I throw Michael Wacha in that mix too. But, you know, they're going to have to really limit runs. That's been the formula all season. The Royals have been successful when they have limited the opponent's offense and have scored just enough to come out ahead. And they're going to need to do that, you know, even better this weekend. I do think, I'd like to think from an emotional perspective, you know, every game's a game, every opponent's an opponent. And, you know, that's what the Royals preach, and that's truly what they believe. But I got to feel like there is some sense of, hey, the defending World Series champs are in town. Here are all these superstars. They are expected to steamroll everybody. I believe that that's the kind of thing that can light a fire under a team, regardless if they're a team that's underperforming, overperforming, playing well, not playing well. I think when a team like the Dodgers comes to town, I think that's a team that gets you out of your seat.
Visiting with Jake Eisenberg, he's the play-by-play voice of the Kansas City Royals. And Jake, with 17 games remaining until they hit the All-Star break, right? These three against LA at home, and then you go on the road for four against Seattle, and then three against the Diamondbacks before six games, three against Pittsburgh and three against the Mets before we hit that July 14th break in Major League Baseball. What is the best case scenario for this Royals team, in your view, over the course of these 17 games as they get set for the back half of the season and hopefully another push towards a postseason berth?
I'm going to be a little snarky here, Logan. Best case scenario is winning 17 straight games and going into the All-Star break having won 17 in a row, right? That's obviously the best case scenario. In truth, I think you'd feel really good if you went into the All-Star break as a 500 team. I think we've seen the last couple of years that being a 500 team keeps you pretty squarely in the mix for a wild card spot. Obviously, the Royals would like to be much better than that, but heading into the All-Star break at 500 keeps you squarely in the playoff mix, keeps you squarely in a divisional race. I think even though the Tigers have been really, really good this year, I think you're currently five games below 500. You go 12-7. Over these next 17 games, you wind up at 500 heading into the All-Star break. I think that's something you'd feel pretty good about. I think that's something that at least I'd feel pretty good about. I do want to make one point about the division, because I think this is something I noticed yesterday that I think is kind of interesting too. This point last year, through 81 games, the Royals were five games over 500, 43-38, but they were 10 games back of Cleveland for first place in the division, right? Like, that's a double-digit deficit. It was actually the Royals' largest deficit of the season last year. This year, 38-43, so flip the record, five games under 500, and they're 12.5 games back of the Tigers. So a little bit of a larger deficit, but, you know, still sort of within the same vicinity. One thing I found interesting is looking back at last year's schedule. Well, the Royals actually caught the Guardians for first place in the division at the tail end of August. And then obviously September didn't go very well in the wake of Vinny Pasquantino's injury and the other things that happened. But the point is that between the end of June last year and the end of August, the Royals went from 10 games back in the division to tied for first in the division, which is all to say that even though we're 81 games in, and even though the Royals are 12 and a half games back of the Tigers, there is nothing that says the Royals can't make up that gap and pull into a tie for first at some point in late August or early September and make this a race down the stretch. Because keep in mind, the Royals are one part of this equation. The Tigers are another part of this equation. They've got to keep playing well just as much as the Royals are trying to play better, right? So I look at this in two ways. You look at the first half of the season and relative to maybe expectations, especially recently with the winless homestand and this home losing streak. It's been tough, you know, over the course of the month of June while the Tigers have been riding high. But I also think that as tough as maybe this recent stretch has been and maybe the overall first 81 games have appeared to be, well, you look up, you're five games under 500, you're only 3.5 games out of a playoff spot, and you still have an entire half of the season left to go. That is a whole lot of baseball.
I think that's extremely well said, Jake. Appreciate your time this morning, and go out and enjoy yourself at Kauffman this weekend. Hopefully we have a chance to see some good Royals baseball over the next 3 days against the defending champion Dodgers.
Yeah, should be a fun weekend. Thanks.
No problem at all. That is Jake Eisenberg. He's the play-by-play radio voice for the Kansas City Royals joining us. And I mean, it's hard, man. I mean, right. It's easier and harder to talk about a team when they're losing than when they're winning, right? There's more to talk about, I think, when a team is losing, but it's way less fun, way less enjoyable to discuss. And I think that it's an interesting dichotomy, right? It's an interesting case study in sports fandom. Because, I mean, I said it at the start of the show, Nathan, that I didn't hear calls like this, right? You didn't hear the fan base being as vocal and outspoken about a team struggles when they're a 100-loss baseball team, right? I didn't hear everybody up in arms and pitchforks at the door, you know, at the gate, when this was a team that was 56 and 106, right? But after you win 86 games last year and you make the postseason and you get to the ALDS and then you have this season, and Jake's right, right? As much as we are frustrated with the way this Royals team is playing and they're sitting at five games below 500, they're only five games below 500, right? They're only 3.5 games out of a wild card spot. But I think after what we saw last year and the hopes for this Royals team this year, you thought that this would be a better year, and it hasn't. And with the expectations having risen to that level of being a postseason baseball team, I think fans get more frustrated when you don't see that come to fruition. When you see a team kind of reverting back a little bit, which, if I'm being honest, shouldn't have surprised people.
I thought this team should contend for the AL Central this year. Back in March, I thought the same thing after the 16 out of 18 stretch into early May. I mean, obviously, when you have a successful team, more people watch. And so now there is more apt to be the casual fan watching that's upset. But I don't think those are the ones that are flooding the text line. Like, don't get me wrong. But I just mean to say that if we had this much attention on the 2023 Royals, fans would have been really upset as well. That team was brutal to watch. It was like the opposite problem. They couldn't get anybody out at the plate. You're going to the bullpen by like the second or third inning every day. It was an awful season. But I think you're right. I think the frustration, I think why it's so like guttural and why it's so like over the top is due to the expectations. And I understand that. I thought that at the end of 2024, I thought that was the floor for this season. I thought they would go out and supplement the lineup. And I thought certain guys would take steps forward. And, you know, Michael Garcia certainly has, but elsewhere that hasn't happened. So I'm with you. I think this is in large part due to the expectation. I think it's incredibly fair.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. There's so many ways to approach it this year, right? I said coming into the year, right? And I heard a lot of people that were saying the Royals were an 88, 90, 92 win baseball team. I didn't see that as plausible. My best case scenario was the Royals would be a similar story, similar version of what they were last year, 85 to 87 wins. And I looked at that because history tells a story. And in the last 50, 60 years of in the modern day of Major League Baseball, there have only been a handful of teams, 12, I believe, 13 counting last year's Royals, to win 30 or more games year over year, right? For the Royals to go from 56 wins to 86 wins. And in fact, I take that back. I think it was 25 or more wins year over year. There's only like six or seven that have done it 30 plus games won year over year.
Yeah.
And when you look at the following season after that crazy improvement, only like two of them had ever improved upon it for a third year. So I thought that we might see a regression back to the mean a little bit for this Royals team. I didn't think it would be to this extent. I didn't think you would see a Royals pitching staff top to bottom as elite as it is. Because here's the craziest part. You look at the numbers, the Royals pitching staff this year, starting bullpen combined, compared to the starting pitching and the pitching of the 14 and 15 Royals, this pitching staff top to bottom is better. I'm not saying there is elite in the relief pitching category necessarily when you look at Urcig and Estevez compared to HDH, right? But the starting pitching mixed with the bullpen, this team is better. The hitting is non-existent. I mean, that's the problem, right? And he said it. At this point last year, this team was 287 with runners in scoring position, which is insane. 220 this year with runners on second and third. When you're hitting just above the Mendoza line with runners on the bags, you're not going to win games. And this team is more talented than that.
Yep. I guess I didn't think the Royals were going to be a 90-95 win team. I think what the city should expect, being a small market, is the team develops starting pitching well. They sign their homegrown middle-of-the-lineup hitters, and they supplement outside of the organization for the rest of the lineup, and that equals out to a slightly above 500 team that some years makes runs towards the playoffs and some years doesn't. And they're trending to fall short of even that expectation right now due to that fall-off in average with runners in scoring position. So at the end of last season, I thought the team should be right back here again with another bat or two that can hit, you know, in timely situations. And so maybe that lends to the fact that we need to have more of a discussion about ownership or, you know, the executive level people in the organization. And I'm not calling for anyone's job, but maybe my frustration lies with them compared to coaching, which is where most of the blame is going right now. But either way, incredibly disappointing relative to the expectations.
I like you bringing up, you know, should some of this flax, should some of this gall that we're seeing go in the direction of the higher ups, the executives and the ownership of the Kansas City Royals? And we may discuss that a little bit later on in our program here today. 913-586-7965. You're listening to Logan Weber and Nathan Williams in for Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
The temperature's rising outside, but you can stay cool and comfortable inside with Blinds.com. Don't miss Blinds.com's 4th of July mega sale happening now. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments with upfront pricing, no showroom markups, and no pushy salespeople in your home. Whether you're a DIY warrior, prefer the white glove treatment, or somewhere in between, Blinds.com makes it easy. Our virtual design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. Plus, we can even handle everything from measure to install. Style every room effortlessly with classic shutters for living spaces, blackout for bedrooms, motorized options for total convenience, shades for your patio too. With over 25 million windows covered and 40,000 five-star reviews, Blinds.com is the trusted name in custom window treatments, all backed by our 100% satisfaction guarantee. Don't miss Blinds.com's 4th of July mega sale happening now. Save up to 50%, plus get a free professional measure. Up to 50% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.